Chef Logan Ely has moved back to St. Louis after years of working at James Beard award-winning restaurants across the country. He's back in his hometown and has been hosting pop-up dinners two nights a week. Contributor Steve Potter has the latest segment of Soundbites, produced in partnership with Sauce Magazine.
Logan Ely has been hosting these underground dinners under the name Square One Project, and he intends to open his own restaurant in a permanent space. He joins us now along with Sauce Magazine's managing editor, Heather Hughes. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air, both of you.
Thanks.
Logan Ely, you haven't lived in St. Louis, I think. Has it been about a dozen years?
Yeah, just about. Born and raised here, but left when I was young and decided I wanted to cook. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's been about 10, 12 years.
And you've only been back a few months, I understand.
Yeah, pretty much.
You've worked, I guess, all over some notable restaurants all over the country and outside of the country. What are some of the highlights of your career so far?
You know, right after St. Louis, I was in Chicago. I worked for a really good restaurant called North Pond. That was kind of where I cut my teeth at, so to speak. And then from there, bounced around a lot. I was in Hong Kong for a little bit, which was cool. New York after that, which was really awesome. I had the chance to work at Blue Hill in New York and Show, which was a really great restaurant there, and then ended up in Napa Valley. Decided to learn how to bake bread. Mm-hmm. So I worked for Thomas Keller at Bouchon Bakery. Basically, we did all the breads for the local businesses and the French Laundry and all that stuff. And then went to Houston, helped open a restaurant, and then kind of bounced around Scandinavia a little bit to not only work, but eat and drink a whole lot. So
that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah.
When you were here in St. Louis, what were you doing?
Beforehand?
Uh-huh.
So after high school, I went to Forest Park Community College, their culinary program. And at the same time, I was working at an American place. And that's kind of where I guess I seriously started considering cooking as a career and as a craft, really.
Mm-hmm. Heather, Logan's only been back in town for a few months after being gone for years and years and years. How did he come to your attention?
Actually, one of our writers went to high school with Logan and gave me a heads up via email that he was going to start doing these dinners. And anytime anybody with that kind of pedigree who's worked with so many big names, he didn't mention Pass and Provisions in Houston, where he was most recently, has won a James Beard Award recently. We get really excited. So I booked a table at one of the dinners at Square One Project and met him then.
Huh. Well, I want to ask you about those pop-up dinners, Logan, in just a second. But what is there a story behind why you came back to St. Louis, like, without a job? I mean, you didn't have anything lined up.
Question.
You had nothing definite lined up.
No, I didn't really. Maybe I should have planned ahead a little bit better, but you know, I came back. My family's here. I still have friends here. I just thought it was kind of time to play for the home team a little bit. And I had been keeping an eye on what was happening while I was gone. And I think there has been a lot of change for the better in the past, you know, 5-6 years, and especially recently. And I think that's just going to keep snowballing. So I decided to somehow be a part of it. I didn't really know how. Exactly. So I'm still trying to figure that out a little bit.
Did you read Sauce Magazine the years you were gone?
I read every single one.
Really?
No.
You sounded so sincere when you said that.
I believed you. But what you are saying is, though, that you can really tell a difference in the food scene in St. Louis now and compared to when you left.
For sure. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, the chefs that have been here, you know, the past decade have done a really good job of kind of getting the public excited about food and excited about coming out to dine and to, you know, spend money at places that are, you know, privately owned or, you know, just chef run restaurants and not kind of like channel their money to places like Applebee's or Chili's or whatever. And that's fine. I love Applebee's and Chili's, but, you know, it's good to support local business and local chefs and that dedicate their lives to kind of doing that, you know.
Since I've had a little peek at the type of food that you prepare and your menu items, I'm just wondering what you would order at Applebee's.
I love jalapeno poppers, and I love the giant mugs of Bud Light or whatever they're schlepping out now. I don't know.
Heather, talk a little bit about pop-up dinners, maybe for someone that's not really familiar with the term. They seem to be becoming more popular.
Yeah, I think we've been noticing a lot more pop-up dinners lately through people who are trying to open their own restaurants. Like The Rooster and the Hen in 2016 was Michael and Tara Galina's series of pop-ups. They are the couple who opened Vicia in the Cortex. And it's a really great way to get to know vendors and diners in a new market. If you're just coming in, haven't been in town in a long time, it's a good way to sort of get your foot in the door with people that you want to work with on both sides of the dining experience. And then there's also been series like before Pirano, Gerard Kraft's Fast Casual Italian concept opened. They did lunches at the Cortex. And then before they opened Sardella as well, the restaurant that replaced Niche in Clayton, they tested both lunch and dinner menus at places like Some Coffee. It's just you kind of use a space that where you know people in all different ways, like at lunch or dinner. And then Nudo, which is about to open from the owners of Miley, that has been doing pop-ups in food trucks and at restaurants. It's just a great way to sort of hype up a new concept and then test dishes that you want to do before they're put on a permanent menu.
Logan, how does that work, though? You haven't worked for anyone here in a dozen years, so you come back to town, you're going to have a pop-up dinner. How do you get people to notice you?
That was obviously a big challenge, and I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to figure that out, really.
But people are showing up, so they have.
Yeah. I mean, it started out with, you know, finding a space that I could do something in, and then putting everything in there that I knew I needed, the bare minimum stuff, and then basically begging friends or acquaintances to come in and just like hang out with us and let us, you know, cook you food.
Like your high school friend that wrote the article.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's literally what it was. And then, you know, slowly by slowly, kind of brick by brick, just building this thing up, you know, to what it is now. And then hopefully we'll kind of keep snowballing and keep going forward.
Heather, let me ask you, do pop-up dinners, do they happen with always the goal of it becoming a permanent restaurant space? Is that always the goal?
No, definitely not. There are series like, for example, the Diversion Dinner series that Mike Randolph has been doing for a long time now. We asked him recently if this is like, are you testing a new fine dining concept? It's much more conceptual, like, weird food than you'd find at some of his restaurants. More like the Little Country Gentleman that he used to have in Clayton than something like Randolphi's, his Italian restaurant in the Loop. But he said that he's doing them because he just really enjoys making that kind of food. It kind of gets it out of his system. He gets to experiment and have fun with it on this small scale where he doesn't have to invest in opening a new restaurant.
Right.
So I think it's partly the value of a pop-up is that you are so quick on your feet. Like, you don't have to invest as much in a space because you're using somebody else's. You can, like what Logan is doing, work off word of mouth. Like, it's a smaller project in general, so it's easier to get some people excited about it than trying to find regulars for a whole new restaurant.
Well, Logan, can you be specific about how doing pop-up dinners is helping you focus on your concept or whatever it might be?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's important for a lot of reasons, kind of the obvious that, like Heather said, it helps spread the word. It helps kind of beta test the public and see what the response is. I mean, for me, you know, the biggest thing about what we're doing is it's a way for us to kind of slowly define our own style and our own kind of core values and what we think is important and what we don't think is important.
So what have you learned so far? You've been doing this 3 or 4 months, I guess.
Nothing.
I don't think I believe you.
No, I mean, we've learned a lot. It's you know, every week the menu changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Every week we you know, get a little bit better at something, or, and we make a ton of mistakes and we kind of fail forward with not only the menu but the service and the whole style of the experience. And that's what's important for me. That, you know, that will hopefully will evolve into a restaurant space and a team. And, you know, that's only kind of one goal on our long list of goals. So we'll keep pushing forward on that. That will help us, basically.
Let's explain a little bit how it works, because I have to admit up front, I've never been to a pop-up dinner, but the whole concept sounds really exciting to me. So it all sort of begins with social media, because, you know, I'm not going to see an ad for this or hear an ad on the radio.
No.
So tell me how that works.
So yeah, a lot of it definitely is social media that helps spread the word. I think that the articles that have been written will help, obviously. People saying this is, you know, it's a good chance for people to see pictures of the dishes we've done in the past, a little bit of the dining room, just quick snapshots of what you might be getting yourself into. And it's a good way for me to contact people without really giving them my phone number or email address or anything like that.
I'm glad you said letting people know what they're getting into, because you have some very unique menu items. And why are you laughing, Heather?
I just remembered the note that I gave to you about some of the things he's working with. Right.
Well, one of the things is that you use a lot of items a lot of other chefs might discard in the food preparation process. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big part of where our menu leans and where I think my head goes to when I think about a new dish or a part of a menu or whatever. You know, I have no interest personally in cooking with luxury ingredients like foie or caviar or Wagyu beef or any of that stuff. It's truffles. It's very silly for me to go out and spend $2,000 on a white truffle. You know, I would rather buy a rutabaga and make it taste really, really good and do something really amazing with it. And, you know, the waste, you know, the whole thing with the waste, the wasted products is that, you know, not only financially as a chef, you know, you have to use everything that what comes in your door, you know. So,
but you might use things like carrot peelings or something.
Yeah, carrot peels we'll make a vinegar out of, or a miso, or anything. I mean, we use you know, the lime and lemon peels that you would discard, you know, like a bar would throw away after juicing for cocktails. We take those from local bars and we cook with those, and we make it into something that's really, really tasty and it's really interesting. And it starts a conversation of, hey, let's use this and not throw it away.
And as far as the Square One Project pop-up dinners are concerned, there are a lot of courses, are there not?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I tell people it's between 12 and 14 courses.
Like, which, anything more than four just blows my mind.
Well, it's small bites.
Yeah, they're small. It's small, and it's a rapid progression. The menu is slow at times, and the menu is fast at times.
And just a small amount of tables.
Yeah, we only have four tables and 12 seats total.
Now, do you have to bring a party of four? How does that work?
I don't treat it as a pop-up or whatever you will. I treat it as a restaurant. So if you make a reservation with one person, you're going to sit at a table by yourself. If you make a reservation for three or four people, you guys get a table by yourself. It's not this communal dining aspect. It's very intimate. We'll serve you and we'll talk to you about the food and the drink and the process and all that stuff. It's a one-on-one experience.
But your concept is fine dining. Am I correct?
I take what I like from fine dining, and I leave out the stuffiness. I mean, Heather's been there before. We like to have fun.
Well, let me ask you, Heather, because I think you've talked about it before. There's a trend sort of away from fine dining, more of the casual, not good food, but more casual.
Yes. I think that's right. I wouldn't say it's not like fine dining is dead or something. The way that I would describe it is that there are two things happening, which is a lot of people who have experience in fine dining are moving towards fast casual concepts. Like we mentioned, Gerard Kraft before, his Pirano is definitely, it's like a Chipotle of really good Italian food. And people like Mike Johnson, who we had a profile in our June issue, he used to work for Emeril Lagasse at Emeril's in New Orleans. He worked for Charlie Trotter. But now he is an owner of Sugar Fire Smokehouse and High Point Drive-In. Like, people are sort of moving away from fine dining in a lot of ways. Uh-huh. But that doesn't mean that fine dining is something that is going to stop happening. I would just say, like Logan said, people are becoming much more casual in their approach to fine dining. Uh-huh. Like, it's not all really hierarchical elements of service, or even in the kitchen. There's a more convivial atmosphere. It's friendlier. People are more focused on having fun than doing things in the right traditional way.
That's Heather Hughes from Sauce Magazine. We're also talking to Logan Ely of the Square One Project. He's the chef. I just want to ask you about a couple specific dishes, kind of give people an idea of the unusual way that you approach things. I saw something. They look like little nests. I think they're made out of shaved beets. I know there's a yogurt element. What's that?
Yeah, that was actually one of the first menus that we did. It's been long gone, but it's essentially a nest of beets. And then garnishing it is a beet yogurt. So we take a bunch of beet peels and beet trim and dairy and make that into a yogurt. I think there was like a yogurt powder on there, and we garnished it with some fresh herbs. Just like one quick bite.
Uh-huh. What about, there was some kind of celery root with coffee rinds, and I don't know, you cooked it for over a month?
So we were taking celery bulbs and burying them in spent coffee grounds and baking them for about a few hours so that that residual coffee scent, if you will, kind of impregnates the celery root. And then we'll take them out, brush them off really nice, and it's covered with a sauce that we made by cooking different alliums, so onion family. Uh-huh. We cooked the alliums for 40 days at a specific humidity and specific temperature, and essentially what that does is it creates this really aromatic, sweet, almost molassesy, coffee-like sauce. We would cover with that and then garnish it with a bit of, fresh leaves and herbs and things like that.
Well, I just want to wrap things up and ask you, I know you're looking to make this a permanent, or you're looking for a permanent space at some point. Are you in any type of timeline for that? And what are you looking for? And is there a particular part of town you're interested in or what?
I told my realtor, and I don't think he was very happy about it because he's always trying to get information out of me like that. And I tell him anywhere in the city. So he's like scouring all over the city looking for spaces for us. But there's a few neighborhoods that I would not like to be in because, I don't want to be next to a Target or a Whole Foods or anything like that. That's not really the style of our concept. I think the timeline is probably later this year, early next year. Obviously, that is completely up to a lot of different red tape and obstacles and things like that. But yeah, we're pushing forward. We're looking for spaces. We're looking for another couple key members to join the project and to be part of it. So yeah, we'll see, basically.
And Heather, what are your thoughts about how Logan's going to fit in to the food scene here?
I'm really interested to find out. I think no one's doing exactly what he is right now, but that's also part of what a pop-up is. And when we've talked before, I think it's an incredible opportunity to sort of find your voice as a chef to be able to start cooking for people in a city and figure out what you want to do. So I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well, thank you for introducing Logan to us, and welcome back home. And
thank you.
Success to you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And if you want to go to one of these dinners, the way to do it is to go on Twitter or Instagram at @square1_project.
All right. Sounds exciting. Thanks again.
Cool. Thank you.
That's Chef Logan Ely and Sauce Magazine Managing Editor Heather Hughes talking with contributor Steve Potter. Ely is hosting pop-up dinners under the name Square One Project, and he intends to open a permanent location in the future. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWLU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.